Girl Weekly, and we are back. Do you like the t-shirts? It's going to be a bit confusing for the people who are listening. Should I explain the t-shirts for the benefit of people who are listening only? So Sid says hubby established 2022 and mine says wifey established 2022. And in short behind us, because we couldn't escape cricket even on our honeymoon, is the Babbacombe Model Village cricket team playing the MCC, I believe. So enjoy that, folks. Now, even though we were away, Sid, we somehow found a way to keep up with the cricket. So do you want to give us a bit of a lowdown about what's been happening in regionals this week?
Well, we're in the Charlotte Edwards Cup, as we know, and we've got still got the two groups. Even though the groups aren't geographical anymore, I don't quite get why they've continued with two separate groups. So you've got the Vipers going all the way to Durham to play yesterday. So they're not geographical groups anymore. And why not have everyone play everyone else and make it less complicated? Because, of course, we've got this weird combined table thing still going on, where the top side across a combined table is the one that qualifies directly for the final, etc., etc. Anyway, that top side currently is the Vipers, who have had a couple of good wins, including a great performance by Lauren Bell earlier in the week, which we kind of sneakily watched when we were supposed to be out having a romantic dinner.
But what's a romantic dinner without the Vipers as a background, Sid?
Exactly. Vipers against Diamonds yesterday. We watched that after we got back home. And that was quite a game because, you know, we had like two player of the match performances from Diamonds players. Casey Lev got a fifer, practically unheard of in T20 cricket. And then Bess Heath scored a 50 off less than 50 balls. Played really well, and yet somehow the Diamonds still lost. How did they manage to lose that game? Especially after, so Lauren Bell after the game the other day, her first over against the Diamonds went for 19. She did bowl a no ball. I'm not convinced she did a whole lot else wrong apart from the no ball, but you know, Bess Heath has obviously came out looking to hit it and she hit it. So what went wrong for them? Well, it's actually quite simple that, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. After hitting that first over for 19, then the Diamonds basically acted as if they'd won the game. And, you know, it made a big dent in the runs required because they were only chasing 120-something. But, you know, one over doesn't win you the game. They needed 5.7 and over from there. And they never went at even 5.7. They went at 5.5 for the next few overs, and then the run rate fell again to like 4.5 for the last 10 overs. And, you know, you're not going to win the game under those circumstances, you know, chasing 120. So, you know, I think that the Diamonds really did for themselves, unfortunately, there.
I think that they were banking on having the wickets in hand to win them the game, because if you've got Nat Sliver coming in next, then you think, well, you know, we can win the game, and actually they then lost a few wickets and that dented it. So I don't think that necessarily their strategy was wrong for the first 10 overs, but actually it showed that Vipers have a kind of bowling attack but also a kind of mentality and an ethos that they're never out of the game, and it does seem that still in regional cricket we are seeing sides who should win kind of choking a bit and getting a bit nervous, and Vipers somehow, you know, when their backs are up against the wall, they seem to not crumble in the way that other teams do. So I tweeted yesterday that it reminded me of the Rachel Hayhoe Flint final last year, when really there's no way they should have won that. And again, it was against the Diamonds, so that's going to be a rivalry for years to come, I suspect. But yeah, you're right that the Diamonds should never have lost that. And Sid's a happy bunny, what can I say?
Yeah. I was pleased to see Bess Heath doing well. I think that she's got a real opportunity this year to kind of put in a case and go, look, I'm going to be the one that's going to be England's next wicketkeeper batter, you know. And performances like that are going to put her right up there. So well played, Bess Heath. In the other group, Sparks have been dominant. Sparks have won all their three games. They've been quite dependent upon Amy Jones, who didn't play any games in the Charlotte Edwards Cup last year because of England duties. So it's going to be interesting to see how they cope later in the season without her. She scored, you know, like half of their entire run tally or something. She scored way more than anybody else. But, you know, there's been a couple of other interesting things with Sparks. So Izzy Wong's been batting, opening the batting. Which has been kind of an interesting move. It's come off one in three times so far. I've played three games, it's come off once. But if it one in three times for Izzy Wong in that role, it's probably, you know, what you want to see. And if she's going to hit 40 off 20 balls one in three times, then that's going to one in three times give them a really, really good start. And that's going to be worth doing. And if she can increase that to something like one in two times, then that's going to be really, really handy. Yeah. So we talked a couple of weeks ago about Izzy Wong potentially ending up as a batter who bowls a bit. So, you know, that's looking like a really clever, smart move to put her up there.
Definitely. I think it shows that, you know, kind of Laura McLeod Sparks, they've got that flexibility and they're not going, oh, well, Izzy Wong's a bowler, so we're not going to open the batting with her. They're just going, well, look at her pre-season form. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and overall, Sparks have really changed this year, I think, that you know, we've got some new personnel in there. But if you look at their batting numbers, the strike rate of Sparks batters last year, I've got this written down so I don't forget it, 95. So the top order for Sparks in the T20 competition last year was striking at 95. This year so far, they're striking at 128. So there's been a huge increase, you know, in the strike rate, and that explains Sparks' success there. So that's the Sparks. In sort of nominal third place across the sort of combined table thing, we've got the Stars. They were beaten by Sparks, but they've won their other two games. Eilish Cranstone's come out and she's been playing positively. She's hit 250s, a 56 and a 66. Also worried about Callie Ann Moore. So she hit a 50 yesterday, and it's really impressive to see these young players coming out and hitting 50s at sort of a strike rate of, let's get this right, 118. For years, one of the big problems with players coming through is that players in junior cricket have been encouraged to protect their wicket above their strike rate. So, you know, you've got players coming through that aren't hitting it. A strike rate of 100 or over. Now we're starting to get these young players coming through that are able to hit a strike rate of well over 100. And that gives me a lot of hope for the future that, you know, in 5 or 6 years' time, we'll be able to compete with the Australians with players like that coming through the system. So.
But also, I think that game showed the importance of depth in your batting, didn't it? Because Stars should not have won that game from where they were. Like, it was a really tight finish, wasn't it? And I think in the end they did it with an over remaining. But yeah, it was one of those ones where you kind of thought, oh, they're in a bit of trouble here because they lost Bryony Smith and bingo, Alice Capsey early on, and we were kind of, you know, looking at that going, oh, they're going to struggle, and they didn't. And that's, you know, some credit to young Kaylee Moore for that.
Yeah. And talking of teams that won games they shouldn't have won, or lost games they shouldn't have lost, Sunrisers v Storm. So Grace Scrivens, another, player that we've been kind of touting as the future, she had another very good game. She got four for and hit a 50. And we got to the point where the Storm needed three off the final ball. They played out to mid-on, was it? To Maddy Villiers fielding, you know, just beyond the ring. And then it all went horribly wrong, didn't it, Raph? So, you know,
It was a wild throw, basically.
She could have just underarmed it into the bowler at the bowler's end. Yeah. And, you know, they would have presumably been a run out and they'd have won the game. But instead she hurled it at the wicketkeeper. Wicketkeeper missed it. Players backing up both missed it. It went for four. Game lost.
I think that there's an element of Maddy Villiers being used perhaps to playing for England when actually that ball would have been successfully, would never have gone to the boundary because the backing up would have been more successful even for a wild throw. But there is also an element of just going mad because she got excited that Sunrisers were going to win a game. That sounds really awful, doesn't it? But it was just, it was just quite disappointing because really they should not have contrived to lose that. And shows that in terms of kind of competing with Australia, we've maybe got a way to go with the fielding.
Perhaps. I mean, Maddy Villiers is a great fielder.
She is a great fielder.
It's a totally uncharacteristic moment.
It's very strange.
It was a very head-in-hands moment.
Okay. And that was obviously in the second round of games on Wednesday, which we watched because it was raining in Devon, conveniently. Anyway, so that's a little roundup of regionals. Thank you for that, Sid. There's been quite a lot of big coaching moves announced this week. So let's talk about that a little bit. The first one does directly affect regional cricket. because it's about Trevor Griffin, who of course stepped down from his role as the head coach of Sunrisers last month, it was, quite suddenly, quite unexpectedly, and it's been announced that he is going to be the new head coach of Western Storm. And he's going to take over at the end of the Charlotte Edwards Cup, so he's going to be in place in time for the Rachel Leo Flint Trophy this year. So yeah, that's quite an interesting one. Obviously, in terms of him stepping down, it was quite sudden, and the official statement said it was because he wanted to focus more on being nearer to his family, who obviously live in the West Country, and so I suppose this is a kind of logical move for him, in the sense of not having to do crazy commutes between the West Country and London, where Sunrisers are based all the time. So I guess that this new role means that he can be based at home for the majority of the time, which is probably probably better for him personally, I guess.
Yeah, I just have to say that if I was Sunrisers, I'd be really quite disappointed with what's happened. I think that Sunrisers have a right to feel that they, you know, they agreed a contract, they agreed terms. You know, he was going to take them into this year, and then suddenly it was like, no, you know, I'm waving goodbye to you. And then suddenly he turns up at your rival, you know, a few weeks later. If I was Sunrisers, I would feel that, slightly aggrieved by that I'd been let down. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that other sports, you know, don't allow to happen, frankly. You know, in football, when this kind of thing happens, you do see people moving. But there are substantial amounts of compensation to buy people out of contracts, because football managers and things are tied into long-term contracts. So, you know, if you leave your gig with, you know, United and want to join City, you know, you have to either wait several years or they buy you out for a lot of money. And I was kind of surprised in a way that those kind of contracts aren't enforced in cricket. They're obviously not. But, you know, great news if you're you know, supporting the Storm, because, you know, a very successful coach, you know, and you've got him back after, you know, he was so successful there in your Kia Super League days.
Yeah, it's perhaps, in a way, a bit surprising that he didn't stay with the Storm, that he decided to move to the Sunrisers. But I guess that was maybe tied into doing the 100 gig with London Spirit, who are the kind of equivalent of Sunrisers in the 100. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. He's obviously going to keep doing the Spirit gig, so but have a kind of split role from the regional stuff. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, the two Trevs reunited, Sid, Trevor Griffin and Heather Trevor Knight, just for anyone who needed that explained. Okay, so that's the first coaching announcement that happened this week. The second one was Charlotte Edwards, who has been out coaching in WBBL with Adelaide Strikers as the kind of assistant coach, but has just kind of bagged her first head coach role in the WBBL, and she's going to be the new head coach of the Sydney Sixers, who have struggled a bit in recent years in WBBL in terms of the personnel that they've got available. You would expect them to have a better finish than they actually have done. So that's quite an interesting move for Lottie, isn't it, Sid?
It is. It's a very different challenge doing the WBBL compared to what Charlotte Edwards has been doing in this country. She's had a long time to build up to where she is. So she moved to Hampshire, what, sort of 6-7 years ago, when the county championship was still, remember that? Remember the county championship, guys? she moved there, you know, and it was kind of, everybody knew that the regional thing was coming. And I think that she was kind of hired at Hampshire in preparation for that.
Yeah.
And she's had a long time to build up the team. And she's the team that's at Vipers now is basically, the team that she's built over that long term.
Yeah.
And that's what the gig in terms of regional cricket is about. It's about building something for the long term and selecting players, you know, 3 years ago that are now, you know, coming into your team and shining. It's about selecting the right juniors to move forward. And it's about coaching people individually and about progressing people and about, you know, taking a player, you know, like your Freya Kemps, taking them, you know, in the nets 2 years ago and, you know, giving them the right coaching so that they can now emerge, you know, this year as a successful professional cricketer. The gig in the WBBL is really different. You don't have any control over your players, essentially. Lisa Stelaker, excuse me, is the talent manager at Sydney Sixers, so she's the one saying, you know, we're going to hire this player, we're going to sign this player, we're not going to retain this player. And you only get a very short amount of time. So you've got no time to coach anybody. You've got no time to come in and, you know, go, I'm going to completely change your technique. I'm going to change your bowling action. I'm going to change, you know, you can maybe tweak things ever so slightly. But essentially, the role at the WBBL is to kind of gel a team and just to kind of mould it together in the very, very short term. So a very different kind of challenge. But exactly the kind of challenge you'd give yourself if you were trying to go, you know, I want to push myself outside my comfort zone. We've talked a lot about players pushing themselves outside their comfort zone by making moves, and we've said how important that is. Look at Marie Kelly this year, who's, you know, gone somewhere fairly new. I mean, it's sort of not new in the sense that, you know, she was at university in Loughborough, but it's new in the sense that she's been, you know, with the Birmingham kind of side of the Midlands for her whole career cricket wise. She's pushed herself outside her comfort zone, gone somewhere slightly different, you know, and it seems to have made a difference. And, you know, that can be the case in coaching as well. So, you know, good luck to Lottie with that. You know, and ultimately, that's the kind of pushing herself outside the comfort zone is what's going to benefit whatever country is the first one to hire her as their international coach, whoever that might be.
She's made no secret that she does have international ambitions. And obviously, doing a head coach role in the WBBL is a really important thing to have on your CV in that respect, because the WBBL is ultimately the most respected and the best franchise competition in the world. You know, you can do all of the coaching in your fair breaks and obviously coaching in the 100, which is another well-respected competition, but it's still the WBBL is the one, isn't it?
That's your pinnacle. Yeah. If you can, you know, go ahead and turn the Sixers back into a winning team in that.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Okay, and now our third kind of coaching appointment, which is a slightly different one, because
we're going to talk about some men's cricket, almost.
We're going to talk about the other game. Scary. We don't know anything about men's cricket, so, you know, bear with us. Matthew Mott is moving from his role as head coach of the Australia women's team, which he's done since 2015, and he is moving to be the new white ball coach of the England men's team, because they have split the role. And I think this is really interesting, Sid, because a lot of the reaction around this has been people who normally cover men's cricket and who are going, oh, that's brilliant, look at Matthew Mott's track record of success with the Australia women's team. He's won multiple World Cups, he's won multiple Ashes, and therefore he must be a really brilliant coach. And obviously these are people who maybe haven't necessarily followed the women's game very closely, and perhaps don't quite understand some of the dynamics that are at play here. And no disrespect to Matthew Mott, but from where I'm sitting, it does feel like a lot of the success that he's had with the Australia women's team has been down to working with a brilliant group of players who are, you know, who have unrivaled kind of resources, unrivaled professionalism within their country, and who just have, you know, the incredible kind of opportunities that aren't available to any other country in the world. And if you've got a team with Meg Lanning and Elise Perry and Beth Mooney and Alyssa Healy, then you aren't going to lose that many World Cups. And how much has Matthew Mott been kind of an integral part of that team's success? I'm just not massively convinced. And the other thing that I said on Twitter the other day was about the fact that it seems fairly obvious to us as people who follow the women's game closely that it's Meg Lanning that's calling the shots within that team. I don't think that that's really something that's up for dispute. Certainly Meg Lanning is rumoured to have been she's rumoured to have played a part in the fact that that Cricket Australia decided that they were going to remove Catherine Fitzpatrick from the head coach role and appoint Matthew Mott. You know, there's rumours that that Lanning and Fitzpatrick weren't getting on so well, and therefore they kind of went, okay, well, we'll go along with what Lanning wants. And what she kind of wanted was, it seems, a head coach who maybe just sort of works with her but listens to her as the ultimate arbiter, and she's more in control than the head coach. And there have been a couple of behind the scenes documentaries that people have made. There was one about the 2019 Ashes that actually managed to get inside the changing room, and certainly a lot of the footage from that supported this idea that when they were, you know, when it was shall we declare at Taunton and give England a chance, it was Meg Lanning saying, I don't think we should, and I'll go around and ask everyone what they they think, and that just that kind of thing. So obviously we're not inside the dressing room.
But there's no real doubt that if there genuinely had been a clash between Matthew Mott and Meg Lanning, which one would have come out on top, right?
I don't think that that's up for dispute. And I thought that the Guardian piece on Matthew Mott's appointment, there were a couple of really telling quotes that I think kind of support what I'm saying. So one was from Brendan McCullum, who's obviously the new Red Bull coach of the England men's team. And he said, "Oh, the white ball coaching role didn't interest me because the team is flying. They're one of the best in the world. I wasn't interested in a cushy kind of a gig." So like he's kind of saying there that like the white ball gig for the England men's team is almost similar to the Australia women's gig. It's a cushy kind of a gig because you've got such a successful group of players who are basically doing their own thing that you don't really have a lot to do. That's Brendan McCullum saying that.
It's an odd
that.
Quote,
that's not
isn't
me.
It? Because he's literally saying that Matthew Mott's got a cushy
gig. And then the other thing was from Rob Key, who's obviously the kind of mover and shaker in this appointment, said the decision-making process, so this is how we decided who we were going to appoint, it was about someone who wasn't going to come in and disrupt the environment. So they aren't expecting Matthew Mott to come in and make a load of changes and be really brilliant and sort of lead the team into this new unprecedented period of success by making some radical changes. They're expecting him just to sort of like chug along quite happily. And I feel like that's sort of what he's done with the Australia women's team.
Yeah, and there's an interesting question of, you know, what's going to happen to the Australia women's team now. There's an interesting Venn diagram, I think, to be drawn between the people who say that Matthew Mott has been an absolutely integral part of Australia's success and the people that say that Australia will be absolutely fine without Matthew Mott. Seems to be a perfect circle. It's like everyone's saying both those things.
Yeah, they're still like, going to win Commonwealth Games gold.
They both can't be true. Yeah. Either Matthew Mott was an integral part of their success, in which case they're in trouble
Need
now.
Need to be a bit worried, yeah.
Or he didn't really matter. He didn't really do very much. It was all down to Lanning, Perry and co. Therefore, you know, who needs him?
Yeah,
this is where we get criticised for being anti-Australian.
We're not anti-Australian though. I've just said really nice things about the Australian team. And I don't necessarily think it's wrong to have a dynamic between your captain and your coach where your captain calls the shots. I think it depends on the what you want at that particular period in time. And the England women's team have certainly had... Exactly. The England women's team have certainly had coaches in the past and arguably currently have a setup where it's the captain calling the shots rather than the coach. So it can work. But I just think it's then disingenuous to imply that your head coach is some kind of absolute genius. And I do think that it shows a certain kind of ignorance about the actual dynamics within women's cricket from people who are suddenly going, "Oh, Matthew Mott, who's this?" Anyway... Shall we wrap up there, Sid?
Yes.
Let's go back to happy married life, shall we?
Okay.
Bye for now, everyone.
Bye.